In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
Hey, this is EMS Office Hours, and this is Jim Hoffman. Tonight we have no Josh Knapp, the co-host. Unfortunately, Josh had a prior engagement, but hopefully he is listening to it somewhere out there on the interwebs. We do have a guest host tonight. We have Rami Duckworth with us. Before I get Rami on the line here, I just want to remember and remind everybody that this episode of EMS Office Hours is sponsored by EMS Manager. Go visit them over at emsmanager.net. Get a free trial of their innovative and easy-to-use EMS employee scheduling and management software. A little bit later on during the show, I will give a little bit more information about EMS Manager, what it's all about, and hopefully maybe get you to go over and sign up for a free trial. So let me get Rami in here and get the ball rolling. Rami, you with me?
I am, Jim. How are you?
Fantastic. Well, thanks for joining me tonight and stepping up and taking Josh's place for the evening. I know I approached you on this because I thought it, being the position that you're in and sort of working, you know, different angles of EMS and stuff. I got a question, I think it was last week or the week before, from one of the listeners about the question of cross-training, you know, police officers being EMS and EMS being police officers. And, well, that's not quite what I want to sort of target tonight's show about. I was thinking just day-to-day stuff that we do in EMS, where we interact with law enforcement, we interact with fire, and I've found over the years that there's not a lot of clear-cut, policies or guidelines in place when it comes to things that we interact with each other for. They're always in sort of this gray area of no one really wants to know what to do or quite sure how to handle situations. Have you found that at all, or do you have anything in place where you're at that sort of kind of cuts through some of that?
Well, where I work currently as a firefighter paramedic, in our system we work together pretty well with the police department, and we even get a chance to train with them occasionally. It's something that I feel very strongly is really important. And I'm the EMS coordinator for our department, so I get to have a little bit of influence on that. But even with that being said, and knowing that it's part of my own responsibility, we don't do it as often as we should in my own department. And at least in the departments that I've worked in and the people that I've had a chance to talk to, it seems that without making it too much of a generality, that's most places, would say that for police and fire and EMS, especially when they're separate services, that we don't cross-train and interact with each other until we're on the scene already.
Right. Yeah, right, exactly. And I think everything from where you get a call where it might be a crime scene type of a call, or in fire instances, maybe you get a call where maybe there's some sort of a danger that might be involved. You know, it's never quite, I guess, spelt out is what I'm looking for, you know, and there's not a lot of that training that goes on in EMT class or paramedic class that says, okay, you get on the scene of a crime scene and, you know, this is exactly what you should be doing. They sort of give you like this rushed over type, response of, well, don't touch anything until the police get there. And that doesn't really help us when we get on a scene where, let's say, you've got multiple patients going on, you've got somebody who's shot or stabbed or whatever. You know, it's like now it's like, oh, do I touch this person or shouldn't I touch them? And it's sort of like this gray, you know, kind of fuzzy thing that goes on, and you don't find out what was expected of you until long after the call's over. You know, then you got to hope you remember, if it ever happens again, what you're supposed to do. Because like you said, there's not a lot of that, training together that goes on. You know, I'll tell you a story real quick. That I, one of the things that kind of prompted me for tonight's show, too, is that I heard a story. This fire company got called to help the police search for a weapon because the police didn't have, you know, enough personnel to kind of canvass a large area. They called the fire department in to canvass the area, and the fire department actually ended up finding the weapon, but then they weren't sure what to do. Do they pick it up? Do they stare at it? Do they throw a sheet over it? You know, they weren't even sure themselves what to do, you know, and it's like that's the type of thing where you kind of get thrown into a sort of a situation like that, and it's like everyone is kind of looking at each other, who's supposed to be in charge and who's supposed to, you know, do what on those calls.
Absolutely. I just had I was just earlier this week teaching a course at FDIC in Indianapolis, the Fire Department Instructors Conference, big conference, and I'm teaching EMS aspects of extrication, and it's really the only straight EMS program that FDIC has had in years, let alone, you know, the only one at that conference. So it was a little weird, you know, definitely teaching to firefighters, even with some of them being paramedics. And when we were started talking about this, and it became kind of a tangent, because it's not an inherent part of the program I was teaching, police, fire, EMS, cross-training, even for simple stuff. And I said, okay, how many people in here have responded to a car accident that involved a police officer? Not necessarily extrication, but just a car accident involving a police officer where a police officer was injured. And every hand in the room went up, and it was a full room. I go, okay, how many people knew exactly before the call how to get a police officer out of body armor to do an assessment, or if they were really injured, or how many weapons are in the vehicle, or how to secure the weapon, or who else has to be called for an incident like that, or what kind of equipment in the trunk? You know, simple stuff, a lot of it procedural, like you're talking about, and not even necessarily life-saving, you know, life-threatening type stuff. And everybody said that, you know, they didn't really have an idea of how to do that, and it was all figuring it out on the scene and a lot of discussion with the police officers there. And I said, well, you know, I'm sure that you were able to get it done, but how many people in here felt like if somebody had just walked them through this, if you'd had some joint training session, not an extrication for law enforcement or anything crazy like that, but just, hey, bring a local cop in, and this is the kind of stuff that, you know, is going to have to be taken care of, and hey, from the EMS or fire side, understand law enforcement that I know you want to secure your people and secure your weapons, but this is the stuff that we're going to be focused on for life safety. You know, how many people in this room feel like that would have been beneficial and would have helped them out? And again, every hand in the room went up that this is simple stuff. Some of it direct EMS and, you know, potentially life-saving, and some of it just procedural, like, hey, how did nobody ever talk to us about this before? And so I'm really excited that you asked me to come on tonight to talk about that kind of thing, both from the procedural, you know, sort of the paperwork and SOP and memo aspect of it, and the simple, hey, can we get, you know, a cop over here when we're talking about extrication, and we start talking about things like shutting down the road, and you know, or can we bring some firefighters in when we're talking about things like, well, again, extrication or the fire apparatus? It's, you know, thank you for blocking the road, but don't forget we got to get ambulances in and out of the scene, and, you know, simple stuff like that. It shouldn't take as much as it seems like it takes to make that happen.
Yeah, it's funny you say that too. Like, even when you think about it, something like that with police officers that get into an accident, or even if they're chasing somebody and they fall and you know, hurt their ankle, break their leg, like you said, nothing that may be life-threatening, but just sort of this procedural type stuff where you know, like I know from experience that I've had that one of the big things is securing their weapon and making sure their weapon is handed to another police officer that shows up on the scene. But like you said, what about getting them out of the body armor? And what about firefighters? You get an injured firefighter, and you have, they've got so much gear on, the bunker gear, the boots, packs on, things like that. How many people know how to get that off without cutting it all off, you know? And this is the type of thing, like you said, maybe short sort of familiarization opportunities to have somebody show up and go over that is a great idea. It doesn't have to be this big formal training. It can be something as simple as, okay, let's have an officer come in here and show us the best way to get this thing off. You know, let them go over who gets the weapons or who should be contacted at the police, you know, headquarters. You know, some places are small towns where they don't have a big municipal, you know, police force where they can sort of call the headquarters and say, hey, you know, what do we do with this? You know, what do we do with this piece of equipment we found? You know, and it's, I think it's important to sort of think of ways to kind, you know, to get this sort of training in there. And that goes for the police with us as well. I mean, what, like you said, what are we expecting from them? They block a road, which is great, but we still might have to have, you know, another ambulance might have to get in there. Or we might have to, you know, get out of the scene. You know, something last week when we were talking about a conversation we had last week with Josh and Tim, and they started talking about how, you know, as an ambulance, occasionally you can get boxed in by fire trucks at a fire scene. And part of the argument is, well, you know, then you didn't really stage properly and anticipate the fire trucks blocking you in, you know, on the call, you know. And I can agree with that because I mean, that's something I think of when I get on the fire scene. Okay, I got to park someplace where I'm not going to get boxed in by the second arriving, third arriving engines and ladders and things like that. But at the same time, I mean, the fire department themselves should sort of be made aware that, okay, if you see an ambulance, try not to park right next to it type thing. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, yeah.
Just sort of like this familiarization of what everybody's role is on these scenes.
Yeah, absolutely. Short story on my part, went to a call a couple of weeks ago now, and a simple motor vehicle accident, and there was, we'll say, a little bit of friction between our fire EMS department and police department shows up. And it was, long story short, it was because we pulled up and we kind of went across, in approaching the scene, went across the skid marks that led up to the accident as well as some of the roadway debris. And one of the captains from the police department comes up to me, and I was the lieutenant in charge, and says, hey, you know, Rom, what the heck is going on here? You know, you guys are screwing up our investigation, and it's a major roadway, so we're going to have to do an investigation. That person got hurt, and you guys should know better. Some of the other firefighters got a little, their feathers got ruffled, and they're saying, well, you know, life safety, and we're trying to close the road down, and, you know, I got cops and firemen not screaming and yelling at each other, but it had the potential. And I said, look, Cap, to the police officer, I know that you teach accident investigation over at the PD. Why don't you come down to our fire department and you could explain the kinds of things that you're looking for in the accident investigation so that, you know, we can all agree life safety is life safety, and that's top priority in protecting our own people and all of that kind of stuff. And we're still going to do that, and I don't think that any of the police officers, including that captain, would have argued it. But for us in the fire and EMS side to understand, like, okay, so in a situation that it's not necessarily life critical, or we can go around and accommodate the police officers a little bit in those situations, now we're cross-trained, we're educated, we can make things easier for them. We scratch their backs, they scratch ours, and every interaction that we have after that is a little bit better. We can still make the cop donut jokes, but, you know, everything day to day, when everybody feels like they're trying to get helped out by the other departments, it's just an easier life for all of us.
Yeah, because I think it's just because you think about it, to me, the biggest thing with this is a lot of this day-to-day activity that can end up causing a little bit of that friction. You know, I mean, I've worked for places where you get the psychiatric patients and nobody really quite knows who's making the determination whether or not these people are a patient or whether they are, you know, just somebody who's being hostile, you know, to the police or something like that. And then you get to sort of this back and forth as far as, you know, who makes that decision that they go to the hospital, that the police, you know, or that the healthcare people who decide whether or not they're a threat to themselves or others, you
right.
know. And when you sort of get that kind of gray area where it's not really clear cut what's going on, then it's like, you know, well, they, especially when it comes to something, let's say, like somebody who might be under arrest or they're considering putting them under arrest, but at the same time, the person is making threats to harm themselves or might have made it before they got there and not really quite sure what it is. And, you know, EMS might be more inclined to get them evaluated, you know, by the psych doctor, where the law enforcement is more inclined, okay, we don't want to really want to kind of have that go between. We just want to process this person and you know, take him down and get him arrested, you know.
Right.
And then you get sort of like you said, you kind of get to that point of, well, who's in charge and who's sort of getting their feelings hurt and their feathers ruffled because there's that confusion, you know. And I think and nowadays with so much especially with so much stuff going on, you know, online with the internet and the available training that could be out there, even if it's just simply a video that an agency could put on their website in a special area for, let's say, you know, EMS. You know, police officers want to put something on their website in a special area for EMS to go watch about how to respond to an accident scene, like you mentioned, and what they should do and what they shouldn't do. Even that, at the minimum, is something to sort of open that line of communication and avoid, you know, those issues. Especially now, too, you know, you think about everybody who has a camera, the last thing you want is them taking a video of, you know, you and the cops sort of yelling at each other over something on the scene. They tend to make the YouTube pretty quick.
No matter who was, quote-unquote, in the right, everybody
right.
loses the minute that happens. Absolutely.
Right. Exactly. And you get too many people out there who are so quick. And that's, to them, you know, a lot of people watching a firefighter or a paramedic argue with the cop is a lot more entertaining than taking a video of a car with some front-end damage.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you think about that that one cop and paramedic a year or two ago that where the cop grabbed the medic and, you know, there was a big to-do over it with the patient in the back of the ambulance, you know. And it's just these sort of, I don't know, these sort of gray lines for that. I mean, one thing I will say, I do find that when you have people who are paramedics and they also are a cop and they work, maybe they're a paramedic part-time or they're a paramedic and they volunteer at a local firehouse, right? I find that those individuals tend to sort of try to educate their counterparts who aren't paramedics as to what's sort of expected on the scene. I know a guy who's a medic, he's also part of the fire company, and they do drills, and he tells them what EMS expects of them before we get there. You know, sort of spells it out for them so that they know, you know, what they should be doing, you know, before we get there, as far as stabilization, as far as putting a collar on or a longboard or whatever the case may be, you know. And I find that seems to be more common when you've got somebody who's kind of playing both, you know, both sides, that
right.
one or the other will sort of give you a clue as to what's expected. You know, I think some of it too, Ram, is when you get situations where the cops have to do something or fire has to do something at a scene because it's part of their policy and their protocol, but it sort of definitely gets in EMS's way, or it's sort of hurt, you know, kind of getting EMS, you know, confused in that way. By having sort of the sort of in-servicing and sort of insight as to why they do that, I think it even can help us understand why. And then we wouldn't get our, you know, feathers ruffled when they do that type of thing. One thing I know when I worked in New Jersey, the biggest thing was, well, we never shut down, you know, the parkway. Never happens. Doesn't matter how bad the accident is, we don't shut down the parkway.
Right, right.
And I was always like, well, it's a big safety thing. If you have major accidents, you're not shutting down the parkway. You know, you're putting everybody else at risk. And you know, I'm sure there's a reason why they don't want that happening. There's probably a bigger reason than I'm able to comprehend at the time. And I think that goes for a lot of different aspects, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I just think there's a lot of different angles, I think, that are not covered on a day-to-day basis that really, I think, could, you know, be better, you know, handled, I think, with just some minimal training, like you mentioned, you know, just having somebody come in, having somebody, you know, take a look at it and sort of pointing that out. You know, I think it would be a great way to facilitate this, you know.
Well, something that I ran into as, well, like I say, in my position here as EMS coordinator and in my volunteer department when I was the EMS officer over there, to set up a formal training session. Now both of these departments were combined fire and EMS, so really when we're looking at cross-training with another department, we're talking about law enforcement. But I would imagine this would apply if you were a separate fire and EMS service as well. But the issues that I ran into, excuse me, is we had law enforcement saying, well, look, you know, we'd love to come over and cross-train with you or have representatives from your agency come over when we're doing training or to have, you know, they were usually more anxious to come to explain their point of view to us. But it would cause issues sometimes with overtime or training budgets or whatever. So sometimes we would have to cross our fingers and hope that when we would set something up that we could get an on-duty officer to come over. And sometimes it would work out, and sometimes it wouldn't because they'd, you know, hey, we're all in emergency services. They'd have stuff to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I find that with a simple request, like, hey, look, we're looking at talking about this subject, and I think it would really help everybody if we had the police perspective, and we'd like to get an official police perspective as opposed to just like you and I were just talking about, what, you know, what we're able to figure out on scene or what, you know, officer or sergeant so-and-so thinks. And that's always worked out really well for me. I think it can be more of a challenge if you're not in an officer or supervisor capacity to initiate that interaction. But I still think that even if it's just informal, and you know, you're a guy on the street, and you know, you swing the ambulance by, and you know, see a cop there, and it doesn't hurt to just you know, kind of shoot the bull with them, maybe share a cup of coffee, and say, hey, you know, what do you guys normally do for this procedure or that procedure? Like, you know, the examples we've been talking about tonight, crime scene or accident investigation or extrication, or what are your criteria for closing down a road? Like, you know, like, what do I need to say to you guys so that you say, yes, okay, I understand now, we need to close this road down? You know, it's simple Q&A stuff like that. You don't have to wait for a formal session, I don't think.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I remember when I was a new EMT and working in Brooklyn, and we used to stop before they get crazy with making us sit on street corners and not going beyond a 3-block radius of that street corner. We used to be able to drive around a little bit and sort of, do that type of thing. And I had a partner who used to go to the precinct a lot, and I said, "Oh my God, what are we doing here? We're not cops, you know." And then I would go in with them, and I would see that there was that interaction that went on. And pretty much you'd be sitting there telling war stories about, "Oh, I had this call did this. I had this guy last week that did that." But through that, you sort of get the feeling, and you sort of pick up on what was expected. We sort of picked up on what their boundaries were, what our boundaries were, and that really did, I think, help a lot when it comes, to how we operate with them, on scenes. And I did that. I'm glad you kind of brought that up about being able to go ahead and stop by, like you said, and kind of shoot the bull. And maybe if you had an incident recently that was kind of confusing to you, you weren't quite sure what to do, broaching that subject with them, in a more of an informal type of an atmosphere. Like you said, if you're not an officer, you're not a captain, you don't have that sort of pull to get them to come by formally to give any type of training. Sometimes that can work out, just as well, doing more of an informal type thing, instead of kind of shutting down and kind of being this closed community of police and closed community of EMS, sort of, kind of intertwining a little bit with that,
Absolutely. And the analogy that I see is, we all know that when we go to certain hospitals, there's certain hospital staff that you're very familiar with and you have a good working relationship, and that if they seem on a particular day a little bit rough, or they see you do something that maybe wasn't the best that you could have done, you get a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt from, they give you a little bit.
Sure.
And I think if we can do that with the hospital staff, we deal with them obviously on practically every call. If we could build that kind of relationship, even informally, with more of the firefighters and the police officers that we work with, like you say, even if it's just informal and we're swinging by and, hey, we just stopped down and we got a coffee, so we saw you have the sitting on the street corner here, and like you were saying, I got some questions for you too. If nothing else, even if you only learn a little tiny bit, you're building up that benefit of the doubt, and you've got somebody else who it's not just their job requirement to kind of have your back, but you got somebody who's there to really have your back. And it just makes every call that you interact with them a lot easier, just like, we like to go to certain hospitals or work with certain ER staff because, we have a good relationship with them. I think we just sometimes it takes a little extra work and a little, we got to think of making that extra effort to extend that to police and firefighters and whatever, what normally comes naturally in the ER.
Real quick, Rami, I want to talk a little bit about just a little bit about initial EMS training when it comes to this type of thing. But before we do, I just want to quickly talk about EMS Manager, our sponsor tonight. They are, like I mentioned earlier, they're sponsoring EMS officers or EMS Office Hours tonight. And really, I do encourage everyone to go try out their software for themselves. It really does take the chore of employee scheduling and management of EMS providers, and it makes it easy to set up and very, very easy to maintain and manage. It's all mobile. They have a mobile app. You can get it from any smartphone, and anywhere where you have a web interface, you can access this software. Employees can use it, and management can also use it as well. And I mention this every week because one of my favorite parts, especially nowadays, is the fact that pricing is based on the size of your organization, so it's always affordable. And since I mentioned, like, it's web-based, your employee scheduling and software is located in the cloud, and that means there's no additional costs for you to incur as far as IT costs that you're going to have to worry about. And they have a lot of free training on the site, a lot of free tech support, free system software updates. If anybody out there listening is considering this or know that their company might be considering some sort of a EMS management software or scheduling software, go check it out for themselves. It's a free, it's customizable trial you can get. It's over at emsmanager.net. I want to personally thank EMS Manager for sponsoring EMS Office Hours, as well as many of a lot of the other favorite EMS programs from the ProMed Network. EMS Manager is a proud supporter of EMS providers and managers through the sponsorship. Show your support for them, guys. Like I said, go check out their free trial at emsmanager.net. It's from Alatech. It's EMS Manager for online employee scheduling and workforce management. So don't forget, emsmanager.net. There's actually a link in the show notes you can click on to go right to the website and sign up. And if you do, don't forget to tell them that Jim, and actually tonight, Rami sent you there for the free trial.
Yeah.
I see John in the chat room. Josh is not here tonight. Sorry to disappoint you. He had a prior engagement. So, two other things I want to touch on, Rami, I think tonight before we close that. One was, it seems like EMS training nowadays, they keep trying to pack more content into the training, more and more sort of angles, especially with new national curriculum. EMT classes have been extended. Paramedic classes have been extended a little bit, maybe a month, 2 months, depending upon where you go and who's adopted the curriculum so far. But it seems that the stuff that we're talking about tonight still isn't really something that is kind of pushed enough. But yet it's just as critical, I think, as understanding how to run a chest pain patient or a cardiac arrest call. You know what I mean? It seemed that they should focus more on this. And this is something where I think is great. It's a good opportunity for when you have an opportunity with the formal training where teaching institutes can set up with law enforcement and fire, or even things like medevac personnel to come in and talk to the students and sort of give an overview of how they interact with each other. I'm not going to hit every angle, but they can even just give sort of an overview of how each agency interacts with each other and some of the best sort of rules of the game.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And this is something that's fresh on my mind, pardon me, is that, the conference that I just came back from, the FDIC conference, the keynote speaker was touching on a lot of things and didn't touch on this directly, but one of the things that he talked about was that for the amount of time that we spend on training and preparing for WMD and white powder incidents and things like that, that we need to be spending a lot more time on really getting our fundamentals and back to basics and leadership and that kind of thing. And while I teach WMD, and I think there are basics that we need to have in mind to be prepared for that kind of thing, I don't think we should be doing that at the expense of time bringing in, like you say, the law enforcement and firefighters to talk a little bit about this in those initial programs. Because as we all know, the first time that you hear somebody talking about these kind of incidents, I mean, that matters, I think, 100 times more than bringing somebody in after somebody has already been on the road for a while and they've been practicing. I mean, how many of us are still sometimes find ourselves reflexively doing the first type of CPR that we ever learned, head tilt, neck lift, and that kind of thing. I mean,
right.
I know there's so much stuff crammed into these initial programs now, and I know they're getting bigger and they're getting harder to run, but I think that this stuff that you're talking about is still so important because, as all of these incidents, like the little ones, the everyday stuff that we're talking about to the big incidents, like we see in Boston, all of this stuff, we all need to work together as emergency responders, not just next to each other or in proximity with each other. We need to work together with each other, and that has to start day one.
Yeah, I think, and this is also the thing, too, where you don't see a lot of continuing education stuff focused on sort of that hand-in-hand cooperation either. You know, it seems like when you see some of the programs after the fact on things like WMD, and you're taking it as an EMS provider, the content's a little bit different than the content for police or the content for firefighters, you know, which it should be because you have a different job to do, but it seems that there's not enough, emphasis in the other agencies that are going to be playing a part, which in those situations, you're going to have everybody playing a role.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely.
And you talk about things like Boston and the Texas explosions and all, you know, those are exactly the things that you talk about working hand in hand and cross training on a larger scale. You know, looking at what I saw from the Boston thing, what I've seen from providers that who were in Boston who gave their feedback and gave some of their thoughts on it, you know, so far anyway, it did seem that there was a lot of cooperation between agencies. There didn't seem to be a lot of confusion as to who was supposed to be doing what. I mean, I saw reports where they got, I think, all the patients off the scene and to the hospital within like 20 minutes. You know?
Oh, absolutely. I think it was a great example of working together as opposed
right.
to just sort of near each other, you know?
Yeah, like,
no, absolutely. That's how it's supposed to be and that it can be, and that you don't have to be in a I believe you don't have to be in a big metropolitan department or be waiting for, you know, someone to come in and set a bomb off in your town to say that kind of thing. You know, you don't have to wait to start to work with your law enforcement and firefighters until, you know, you're working in a big metropolitan department. That's what I'm trying to say, you know.
Yeah.
This kind of thing. It applies to everybody in every agency. But I think sometimes when tragedies like this happen, tragedies like you say, recently Boston and West Texas, I'm in Connecticut. I'm 15 minutes away from Sandy Hook. I have good friends who responded there. Sometimes something good that I think that we can make out of these tragedies is that gives you the opportunity and sort of put your foot in the door to approach other agencies, whether it's fire or law enforcement, like we've already been talking about, or in the case of Sandy Hook, not just law enforcement, but sometimes your local school systems and talking to them about their lockdown plans or their mass casualty plans. You know,
sure.
Again, it doesn't have to be we're out there training with the school superintendent, you know, once a month or even once a year. But how often do we find out if their MCI plans actually interface with our MCI plans? Or, you know, are is the school system's MCI plan, does that involve calling every parent of every child in the school and telling them, please, here's where the EMS responders are treating your children, rush in and get your children to safety? I had that personal experience once, so that kind of stuck with me. But, you know, these things might give us the foot in the door to be able to talk to a lot of these agencies, even if it's the kind of thing that wouldn't happen in your community.
No, but it's interesting you say that, though, because, you know, especially like you said, with schools is a big one, maybe even things like big manufacturing plants, things like that, where they have, protocols in place for their business or their, you know, their organization. Where does EMS fit into it? Where does the law enforcement fit into it? And do they all, are they all on the same page for that? Even things like active shooter sort of stuff. You know, a lot of times nowadays you got a lot of places that are doing these active shooter drills. You know, where does EMS fit into that? You know, do they have a plan of where EMS is going to be for people to go for help or to just get to a safe point? You know, all these types of things that, like you said, I think there's not a lot of communication. But when you have things, like you said, these sort of these tragedies that present, it does open that door. It does give sort of that ability to open the dialogue to make changes, to ask the proper questions, so that if it does happen where you are, like you said, it doesn't have to be a big metropolitan type, system or area. It can be a smaller town, and it doesn't have to be this big formal training type thing. It can just be a sit-down meeting for a half an hour or so with the proper people to kind of, feel each other out and figure out, who's supposed to do what and where and how it fits in. Because I think sometimes some of these organizations, especially you talk about schools, where they might not be aware of the full capabilities of EMS. I mean, you think about how many times you go on calls and they don't really realize that you can treat somebody with having a heart attack.
Absolutely. And I think that can go in both directions, that they can make the school systems, or you're talking about like tactical EMS stuff or, law enforcement stuff, they can start making assumptions that we can or will do something that we're not going to. Like, is your local police department is part of their active shooter plan to have an EMS person accompany them while they have a potentially live shooter in a building? And, we'll protect you and we're going to bring you in. And, I've seen places where that kind of thing was the law enforcement plan, but it's because they assumed that EMS would just do that. And EMS was like, well, no.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
and whether it's appropriate for particular agencies, yes or no, is a completely different discussion. But the thing is, like, we got to be on the same page, whether we're going to do it and we're going in, or we're not going to do it and we're not going in. Understand that other people in your community or other agencies might be making assumptions that you can do stuff that you can't, or like you say, that you can't do stuff that we do every day. We got to have those conversations open.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, like the active shooter thing. Not every place has a tactical EMS training. And if you get into that situation, we have a plan that we'll bring EMS in with us and we'll, wait a minute, it's like time out a second. Nobody told us about that and we're not really on board with that thought process, And it's true, though. And I know John mentioned about school bus accidents, and actually I had something recently where it was a school bus, and nobody knew as far as, what you did with these kids. Did you take them to the hospital? Did you take them to the school? Do they each get transported individually by an ambulance? And the principal and whatnot had no clue as to what his responsibility was when it came to that,
Right.
And we were like, well, we're not calling every single parent. Don't you have these parents' names and phone numbers and things? He's like, no, I don't have them with me, And it's like there was no, sort of pre-planning with that. And to me, school bus accidents, whether it's a lot of them, you see there's quite often minor accidents with school buses that you come across, but it's really the sort of like this big can of worms that gets opened up that not a lot of people know exactly how to handle that situation, and you end up either transporting everybody to the hospital and you're inundating an ER with 30, 40 kids on the school bus.
Right.
It's just, it is strange. And I think, I think when it comes to MCI training, that is, I guess, the bigger one for all different agencies to kind of work hand in hand more on and maybe focus more on, to know how to operate with each other on an MCI. But I think can also facilitate a little bit the day-to-day activities, to kind of let people know also that you're there and you're open for, the dialogue. You're open for that additional training, that additional awareness, and that they should be open to it as well. Some places I've worked where fire is in charge of extrication. I've worked other places where EMS is in charge of extrication, And
right.
Not everybody's aware on some of these calls who's really in charge of what, when it comes to stuff like that. you know, it can be a little sticky, you know, when it comes to it. So, listen, Rami, I think we pretty much covered this, you know, pretty well, I believe. I think we gave some good insight as to, you know, how people can kind of think about opening that dialogue, everything from the formal training, like we mentioned, to I think what you and I are more on board with is this sort of informal awareness of, you know, contacting, you know, law enforcement and fire, and I think you made a good point with schools and sort of opening that dialogue into what's expected from who and what we can't do and both ends, you know, EMS, fire, and police, you know, what everyone can and can't do versus what people are expecting everybody to do or not to do. So I think you did a pretty good job on that. So before we head out, do you have anything you want to end with? Any final comments or thoughts on this topic?
Only that, as part of your wrap-up, like you say, whatever position you currently hold, whatever your job responsibilities are right now in emergency services, you have not only a need to talk and interact and get on the same page with other agencies before you have to in the middle of an emergency, but you have the power to be able to do that, like we were saying, and gave several examples, formally or informally. There's always a way for you to start to work on it. So, you know, just don't say, well, I'm not a supervisor, or man, I wish the chief would set something up, or the training officer. There are ways that we can do it. And if you work boots on the ground with police officer, firefighter who's boots on the ground, man, just go up to them and say, hey, I wanted to ask you a question. I wanted to talk to you about something. And it'll make everybody's job a lot easier.
Yeah, it's a good point because like you said, you're the boots on the ground, so you can't always wait for management to initiate the conversation because, you know, when it comes down to it and the calls happen, you're the one that's going to be in the situation, not your boss, not the management, not the supervisor. You're going to be in that situation, so yeah, I think you're better off, you know, sort of broaching the topic and figuring out what to do before it happens, you know, and I think that goes for a lot of stuff in EMS that we don't always kind of look ahead to stuff that we can come in contact with, and then it happens, and then we're kind of scrambling. I think we need to really focus on the potential of stuff that could happen in this job and prepare for it more than we do, and a lot of different levels, not just with the course training. So, well, thanks, Rami, for joining me. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate your time. Popping in tonight. You want to go ahead and let people know where they can find you?
I'm on Twitter at Romduck and at Rescue Digest, and you can also get in touch with me at rescuedigest.com.
All right, great. I'll go ahead and put your links in the show notes as well for everybody listening, so they can connect with you there. So no worries if you didn't hear that, everybody. You can go ahead and check the show notes on Wednesday on the blog, emsofficehours.com, and I'll have those links up there. And you can just click and be sure to follow Romney on Twitter and check out his website at rescuedigest.com. All right, Romney, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. Maybe we'll see you again here soon.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Jim. It was an honor and a pleasure, man.
All right. Have a good one.
You too now.
All right, bye-bye. All right, everybody, that's it for tonight's show. We're cutting just a few minutes shorter than usual. I just want to thank you for listening in. Guys, if you have a topic you want to discuss here on the show, be sure to send it over to me. My email is jhoffman@ems-safety.com. I'd love to go ahead and create a topic in the show based on something that you're passionate about in EMS. And bring it right here on the show, and Josh and I, or a couple of maybe a few phone guests, will go ahead and discuss it, or even John will go ahead, of course, and chime away about it in the chat room. So thanks, John, for that, joining us in the chat room. You're a little bit late today, but John Burrell's in the chat. Check him out. He's at One Union 801, the webcast. Check out his show right here on Blog Talk Radio as well. I know that EMS Roundtable popped in earlier. I appreciate him popping in. He must have been a little bit busy. Go check out his Blog Talk Radio show also. I want to welcome some new Twitter followers, guys, before I run out of time here, and welcome Gaston Costa, MD, for joining me on Twitter, Joe O'Reilly, John Marlowe, Allison Winall, Twitter follower Mavro, also Kelvin Chin MHS for following me, and my last one for today is Miss Medi. I actually loved her little Twitter bio. So go check out those Twitter followers, guys, and follow them on Twitter. Be sure you tell them that I mentioned them right here on the show and right here at emsofficehours.com. All right, guys, that's it for me. Have a great week. Until next week, as always, stay safe.